I'm Megan Baudette, and you're listening to Kurdistan Beyond the Headlines, the podcast where we go in depth on stories from Kurdistan and the broader Middle East that you won't hear anywhere else. The small Kurdish-majority region of Afrin, located in northwestern Syria near Turkey and the Mediterranean, was once known as an island of stability in Syria's brutal civil war, famous for its rolling hills, ancient historical sites, and bountiful olive groves. But today, Afrin represents devastation and dispossession for its people and for Kurds everywhere. 4 years ago this week, Turkey and the Syrian National Army fully occupied Afrin after a 58-day war of aggression that saw homes, infrastructure, and medical facilities obliterated by Turkish bombs and countless abuses by extremist militiamen on the ground. Hundreds of innocent men, women, and children were killed. Nearly 300,000 were forced to flee their homes with nothing more than they could carry. Most would never return. Human rights activist Shaler Sido is one of them. Like many other displaced Afrin residents, she now lives in northwestern Syria's Shaba region, where she works to document the atrocities that Turkey and its affiliated militias have committed against her family, friends, and neighbors. Shaler, it's a real honor to speak with you here today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, dear Megan.
So you're originally from Afrin. You grew up in Afrin. Can you tell us a bit about what life was like there before Turkey attacked?
Oh, yeah. I grew up in a very simple family. I'm half Kurdish and half Armenian. My mom and dad, since we were young, they taught us to love Afrin more than anything. We used to have a very ordinary life, but everything was wonderful and meaningful. I studied, went to college, fell in love, got married, had kids, all on my homeland. A life full of peace and harmony. I had friends from different backgrounds, Muslims, Christians, Armenians, and Alawites, of course, till now. I was a teacher. I used to teach English in Afrin schools. I had a center for teaching languages. Before the invasion, as a woman, I was able to establish a full independent life, a life full of projects, along with other powerful women in my city. We always worked to make our city a better place. I remember every detail of my life before the invasion. As if it is a series, I won't let go these memories because they are the reasons, in fact, why I still have the power and ability to go on. Yeah.
Well, Shaler, I don't think you could have put that any more simply or any more powerfully for our listeners. Hearing you share those memories, it becomes so incredibly clear both how important the sense of peace and stability and coexistence you had in Afrin was, and how absurd it is that any government anywhere in the world could have seen this existence in Afrin as a threat. But tragically, of course, we all know that there was one government that did. And that in January of 2018, Turkey began an illegal, unprovoked assault on Afrin and its people. You were there when the first attack started. Can you tell us a bit about what it was like for the civilians trapped facing these atrocities?
Yeah, of course. How can I forget? Months before the invasion, as you know, AKP media, Erdogan media, was sharing war propagandas on TVs publicly. There were clear statements from Erdogan and his followers to launch a very special operation against Afrin. At first, we didn't believe that it will happen. And we considered it as a private media war because we thought the presence of Russian forces in Afrin as a guarantee made us think that the operation against Afrin won't be possible. At exactly 8th of January at 4:30 p.m., I was at home doing my regular routine when all of a sudden a massive explosion happened. The Turkish warplanes attacked a nearby village called Turende that is just 3 kilometers away from the city center. The attacks caused burning of tens of vehicles and trucks that were working in a stone quarry. Black smoke covered the whole city. The attack was massive. Just imagine a very small geographical zone like Afrin, that just constitute 2% of Syrian territory, with what was being attacked by around 72 warplanes. Thousands of mercenaries were on the border tens of tanks. I remember that many international media sites, we were just following the news, made fun of Turkish government for sending all its advanced armament to such a small zone like Afrin. You know, we were shocked by the massive attack, especially when we heard that the Russian forces withdrew from Afrin, paving the way for Turkish Death Army to invade a peaceful city like Afrin. As you said, all infrastructures were shelled. Just imagine, I want to tell you something. Maybe the media didn't mention it before. The only dam that was providing Afrin with drinking water was bombed in the second day of the attack. We were lucky that the dam didn't explode. Otherwise, we would all be drowned. The main generators in the dam were attacked, so we were deprived of water. And all over during the attack for 58 days, people started to depend on underground wells here and there. So we were deprived of clean water, drinking water. And they attacked, as you said, the hospital, the Kurdish Red Crescent medical centers, everywhere. I can't tell you hours how was the situation in invasion during the invasion. But we were, you know, helpless because the international media believed Turkish allegations and that his main concern was to attack the military bases, that he was afraid, they cause destabilize the Turkish situation. So I can say, in short, it was like hell unleashed over small crowded areas. We were helpless. So we felt all of a sudden that these Turkish warplanes are after us. I could still now, in my mind, I could hear the cries of frightened children, the sobs of old women. The invasion was the most brutalist and the cruelest war I have ever seen and heard of. We were only counting on luck not to receive a bomb in our basement we were hiding in. Frankly, I cried day and night as I had daily updates that the Turks were destroying our town in front of my own eyes. We were cornered inside Afrin City. At that point, I felt we had a trap, and we were, you know, we had no easy way out. Worst of all, as I told you, globe media believed Turkish war machine propaganda, while the Kurdish voice was mercilessly choked, muffled, and ignored. Yeah.
2% of Syrian territory attacked by 72 warplanes, thousands of mercenaries, and NATO's second largest army. This went on for nearly 2 months, all to the silence of the international community. Shaler, you're speaking to us from Shaba right now, northwestern Syria, outside of Afrin.
Right.
At what point were you forced to flee your city? And can you talk about what it was like 4 years ago this week when you found out that Afrin was completely occupied?
You know what? First, Afrin people decided to defend their city no matter what, till the last breath, along with young men and women from YPJ and YPG, you know, and many prepared caves and tunnels to hide in and fight and share this defending the lands of, you know, ancestors. But the attacks were unprecedented. At first, Turkish army shelled villages on the border, causing hundreds of villagers to run away from their homes, their lands. And here I want to make it clear that Erdogan's allegation that he was targeting only military bases is a big lie, and was a big lie, and is still a big lie, because all victims were civilians, children, women, elderly people, were killed and shelled without any mercy. I stayed for 56 days in my home, deciding never to let go and let my city alone. I was hiding in a basement. But, you know, just when the invaders were at the gates of our city, I mean, like just few kilometers from the city center, thousands of air raids, artillery, shells, and rockets hit the city center, the nearby villages, the town, So we had no choice but to flee our homes, lest we fall captive at the hands of a pro-Turkey Islamist thugs. And I'm sorry for being emotional, but I remember it. And we took shelter in basements for many days, just waiting for this attack to be over. But it was endless. At that point, when the danger was extremely, we were at risk, we hurriedly, like other civilians, had to join the endless column of fleeing civilians through the only escape route. Just imagine, we had just one escape route via Jabal al-Ahlam, or they say mountains of dreams. On that road, we lost all our dreams, and we led our city to be invaded. Yeah.
What you've just described there, what you lived through during those 56 days in Afrin during the occupation, those are war crimes. Those are crimes against humanity. It's very clear that Turkey was intentionally targeting civilians, trying to cause forced displacement, forced demographic change. And yet, as you also point out, the very same human rights organizations and mainstream media outlets that typically investigate these kinds of situations were silent when it came to Afrin. So let's talk a bit about your work to change that.
Yeah.
You're now working to document the crimes carried out by Turkey and its proxy forces in Afrin by speaking directly with survivors and witnesses to gather testimony and evidence. And because you're from Afrin yourself and in close proximity to the area where these crimes are taking place and the communities that are impacted, you have access to information about the situation there that nobody else does. So tell our listeners, based on the evidence you've collected, what you've seen and heard on the ground, what do people need to know about the situation in Afrin today?
Yeah, a very important question, dear Megan. People everywhere should know that, please. Since Turkish troops and pro-Ankara Arab and Turkmenly rebels occupied my city, widespread abuses tantamount to war crimes. On daily basis, the Kurds, who have now become the minority versus Arab and Turkmen settlers, are subjected to fascist-style violence. And this is the only description that I can say here. An attempt to reshape local pluralist character and empower extremists, from kidnapping for ransom to armed robberies and torture. Remaining Kurdish residents of Afrin say they are suffering abuses at the hands of Turkish-backed rebels. Besides, you know, the frequent infighting among these mercenary factions cast a shade of doubt and distrust over Turkey's rule in these dirty policies. And most of Afrin's original residents now live in the squalid Shahba. You know, we're living in Shahba camps near Aleppo. Our house is condemned by families of Syrian National Army militiamen brought in by Turkey from Eastern Ghouta, Homs, Idlib, Hama, Deir ez-Zor, Aleppo countryside, everywhere. The locals who have clung on to their properties now, they must contend with unrelenting threats of abduction for ransom, extortion, and harassment. Under the patronage of Turkish governor of Afrin and Turkish intelligence service officers, the commanders of armed groups have each created his own zone and fiefdom in the influence zone granted to him by the Turks, acting like feudal lords, you know, who pay the lion's share of their spoils to Turkish officials to act like they don't see or hear anything, and to guarantee staying the longest time possible in power over there. Now, Turkey uses Afrin and other occupied areas in northern Syria as a factory, you know, to manufacture mercenaries over and over again, who have so far been exported to Libya, Azerbaijan in large numbers. So what can I tell you about life in Afrin after the occupation? Schools now enforce gender segregations, Islamic Sharia centers, Imam Hatib schools that encourage extremism are being opened everywhere. Turkish flags fly over public buildings and portraits of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Atatürk hang in streets, schools, shops. There are, you know, many videos, many pictures from inside that show publicly the flags and the Turkish flag there. They enforce Turkification, Arabization, local institutions, streets, shops are being rebranded with Turkish names. The Kurdish language has been removed from academic teaching, replaced with Arabic and Turkish languages. A widespread hunting for treasures. You know, they look for treasures commanded by the outsiders using primitive methods of digging. Illegal excavations that cause destruction of every ancient site, historical site in Afrin. So it was a war against civilization, demolishing a culture by itself. And how can I tell? This is just a tip of the iceberg and what would happen to the native population, to the property, the region's history, the culture, the nature, the animals, you know, it's endless.
It really does sound endless. From what you're describing, there's no aspect of life in Afrin that hasn't been destroyed entirely or irreversibly altered by Turkey and by the extremist armed groups that it supports there. Now, Shiler, you've already given us this essential background context on the status quo in occupied Afrin. And you've shared your very powerful personal story with us as well. Could you also share any of the accounts of human rights abuses that you've heard from eyewitnesses and survivors as part of your documentation efforts?
Oh, yeah. From the very beginning of the attacks, I volunteered in Kurdish Radio Crescent, and I started documenting every single attack, every civilian lost his life. I still have every picture and the wounds that the people who lost their lives, they are just in front of my eyes. I documented every massacre that happened in Afrin because of the media blackout against Afrin. So I had no choice just to use my pen and write down everything that I see and to make it later as a very tragic story for others and to see what really happened. After I came here and I was displaced to Shahba, I went on documenting and I met tens of women, elderly people, kids who suffered and were tortured after we went out from Afrin. But I just remember the two sisters, these two sisters, changed my whole life. And, when I mention their story, I feel very emotional. And because when they were kidnapped from their home in Afrin City, when later they were discovered that they are in detention, they were discovered to held for sex slavery. Just imagine, with dozen abducted women, Afrin women, at secret place center of the Hamzat militiamen. That story affected me a lot. They were about to be trafficked to Turkey and then to be sold, just like ISIS do to Yazidi's women. It's the same method. It's the same mentality, the same way they approach women, especially Kurdish women. I also remember that elderly man who told me he was beaten because he didn't want to get out from his house. And he even told me that even he was 82 years old, remembers of the Turkish faction abused him sexually. Just imagine a 52 years old elderly man. I can't imagine the amount. I don't think it could be happened anywhere just in Afrin, except for Afrin people. Why? The amount of rage, the hate, that these factions and the Turkey that brought you to Afrin is just beyond imagination. You also remember, you know, one lady that I met, she told me that after Turkish factions entered Afrin, they went into her house, kicked the husband out, and raped the woman in front of the kids. And she told me that now she feels very shy to look at her kids, who were aware that their mother is being raped. In the next room, they could hear screams. They could hear her shouts, begging them to stop. But of course, it was hell for the kids. And dozens of stories that I don't have time now to tell all of them. These are just some of the stories that infected. And still, when I tell them, I feel that I want to cry because I don't know what to say. Yeah.
These accounts are chilling to listen to. And they're made worse by the fact that, as you point out, they're not isolated incidents at all. This is not something that's only happened to a few individuals. This is not something that's happened randomly in Afrin. This is part of a systemic pattern of violence intended to essentially force every person who remained there after the invasion to leave. So, in light of all this, looking at the human tragedy that is Afrin 4 years after the occupation, at these stories of terrorism against innocent civilians purely on the basis of their ethnicity, their culture, their desire to live on their homeland, what can be done? Has the world done enough for Afrin and its people? And if not, what needs to happen now?
We should know that the international community's response to invasion and occupation had not been adequate at all. The fall of Afrin did offer a particularly gloomy snapshot of the international community's confused role in the Syrian war that encouraged now Putin to invade Ukraine today. Turkey, by attacking and invading Afrin, invoked Article 51 of the UN Charter and the right of self-defense to justify its attack on Afrin. According to NATO Secretary General, Turkey had legitimate security concerns, but these should have been addressed in a measured way, as he said. Holland found Turkey's grant sufficient, but the EU's high representative, Federica Mogherini, expressed the grave concern about the humanitarian and political consequences. The British Foreign Secretary, Boris Johnson, had gone so far as to insist that Turkey has the right to want to keep its border secure. So my question, by which logic, facing a standoff with Turkey because of its support for Kurdish forces in northeastern Syria, the U.S. response had been muddled, echoing the Pentagon, U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis found Turkey's Afrin offensive a distraction from focusing on ISIS. By allowing the Turkish government to pour millions into Western public relations firms to smear the Kurds who call for their lawful civil and freedom and national rights as terrorists. Now, in the final absurdity, this allowed world governments to sit idly while Turkey launched an unprovoked assault on one of the few remaining peaceful corners of Syria, just like Afrin. Turkey is the occupying power in Afrin. The whole world should know this. And therefore, it is responsible for the welfare of the remaining civilian population and maintaining, as they say, law and order. So far, its armed forces have failed utterly in these duties. It cannot evade responsibility by using Syrian armed groups to carry out its dirty work. Without further delay, Turkey must end violations by its forces and by pro-Turkish armed groups and the international community must hold perpetrators accountable. This is what we ask for, including top Turkish officials who were the cause of all the tragic that happened to Afrin, and commit to helping Afrin residents rebuild their lives. And rebuild my own life, because now I'm without life, without anything. I'm just a lost spirit. It's just for my kids that I keep myself together and keep my strength together. But I think it's time to end this tragic destiny for Afrin peaceful people who did nothing just to ask for to live a normal life. They didn't attack Turkey. They didn't cross the border. Turkey did on very lies, grounds and allegations that are very far away from reality. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't get much more clear than that. Shalair, thank you for your account of what's really going on the ground in Afrin, for your call for action, and for your courage in working every day to bring justice and accountability for your people. I truly hope that you, your family, and all the people of Afrin will one day be able to return to their homes. You can keep up with Shalair's human rights documentation efforts on her Twitter page. And of course, for more stories like this one that you won't find anywhere else, please keep listening to Kurdistan Beyond the Headlines. That's all.